We're going to dive into the show. We're going to get into some of the highlights of 2025. We'll talk about the whole year, talk about me, the generational run. We'll talk about the Trump administration. We'll actually get to a few news stories. There's a couple of things in particular that I want to cover just before we leave. And I guess I want to start by saying in our year in review show, 2025 probably is the best year that we've ever had at America First. I think by far and away easily, this has been the biggest year for the show. Most views, biggest viewership, most viral, biggest clips, biggest collaborations, debates, everything. It was monumental. And now it's coming to a close. Generational run coming to a close. I think we'll leave that behind in 2025. 2026 is a whole new game. But of course, what goes with that in 2025 is everybody is asking, why? How? People are saying, why now? Why was the show so successful? Why are the clips so viral? Why is everybody loving it? And this is something that I've talked about a lot in the past few months. I've been asked about it a lot, and there's been much debate about it in the mainstream media, in the conservative movement. Everybody wants to know, and everybody's wondering, why is the Groyper movement and America First so popular? Why is it so ascendant? Because for a lot of people, it feels like it came out of nowhere. It feels like all of this happened suddenly, overnight. Everybody was busy doing one thing, and then all of a sudden, the Groypers were banging on the door, and it seemed like this was this overnight success. And so people have speculated. They say, well, it has to do with the material conditions in the country. They say it's because the younger generation is frustrated and angry and anxious and depressed because of the economic conditions. They say it is because of politics, because the left wing has bullied young people, specifically the males and the white males. And so this is their frustrated reaction to being attacked for so long. They've become spiteful, resentful, angry. And this is an expression of, this is their reaction against those things. And I've tried to say it as plainly as possible throughout the year. You can point to a few very specific things. What created the phenomenon this year of this show, America First, the Groypers? You can actually pinpoint a few specific things. And it's not complicated. I don't even think it's contentious. I don't think it's debatable. I think it's very clear and very obvious what happened. And starting with number one, the number one thing which accounted for all this success this year, why did the show blow up so much this year? The number one thing, which nobody will even mention, and nobody has mentioned, is that this is the first year that they simply stopped censoring me. That's it. It's that simple. Because for those that don't know me or don't know a lot about me, you might have heard, for many years, I was the most censored, canceled person in the country. And I don't say that to make myself a victim. I don't say that to be a martyr. It is just a fact that for years, I was completely censored, completely blacklisted, blackballed, and everything that that entails. And that went into overdrive in 2021 after January 6th. In 2021, I was banned on everything. Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, DLive, Twitter, TikTok. I was banned on every major social platform, but I was doubly banned because I was also banned from appearing on anybody else's show. So if I went on Sneeko's show, or if I went on Fresh and Fit, or if I went on any other show, YouTube would delete that show also. If I went on someone else's TikTok, or if I was on someone else's Instagram account, they were also banned. And it was like this for 4 years. So go figure. Why did I not gain a lot of traction in 21, 22, 23, 24? Because I literally didn't have a platform. I was banned from everything. The only platform that I could even live stream my show on was the platform that I made myself. Because that was the only streaming platform I was allowed on. It was called Cozy TV. I had been banned from YouTube, DLive, Trovo, things you had never even heard of. And what happened this year is there were a few specific decisions that were made. Number one, I was unbanned on Twitter last May. So this is the first full year that I have been allowed on Twitter since 2021. That's one. Two, I was allowed on Rumble. And all of a sudden, I got a check mark on Rumble. I was allowed to stream on Rumble. I just, in the past couple of months, was allowed to get super chats on Rumble. I was allowed to stream on a major platform. Three, and this is maybe the biggest one, Instagram stopped deleting my clips. And this is something that we noticed. This is like a switch was flipped, I think in like January. All of a sudden, you were able to post my clips on Instagram without being banned. And they were able to get millions of views, hundreds of thousands of views. That was never the case. It used to be the case that if you posted any clip from my show, your whole channel would get deleted. All of a sudden, starting this year, you're able to post the clip without it getting taken down. And then the last thing that happened, kind of like the last shoe to drop, was around May of this year, I was able to start appearing as a guest on YouTube. This is something else where even in 2024, Candace Owens wouldn't bring me on her show because she was worried that if I was even a guest, that the whole YouTube channel would get deleted. And in May, for the first time, I think I did the Hodge Twins, and then I did the Social Hour with Sean. All of a sudden, again, I was on a YouTube show, and the YouTube channel was not banned. The video was not taken down. I don't know if it was even demonetized. But I did those two shows. They weren't taken down, and that reflected a decision that was made at YouTube that they were no longer going to censor me from being on shows. And so I think that changes the perspective on where I came from this year and what all happened, because a lot of people said, oh, it's things that are happening this year. It's because everybody got really hateful. It's because of this, that, or the other. No, it is because for 10 years, we did not have a level playing field at all. And think about this. Think about it. For 10 years, it was a completely gate-kept, closed system. And by that, I mean the conservative politics, the conservative political media ecosystem, it was an oligopoly. It was a closed system. There were a handful of personalities and companies that were chosen. They were selected, and they were immune from censorship and shadow banning and all of it. And it was people like Charlie Kirk at Turning Point. It was Ben Shapiro at Daily Wire. It was Prager University. It's all these familiar people. Everybody else got banned. Going back even further, going back to like 2016, people like Gavin McInnes, Alex Jones, they were unpersoned. They were banned from everything. They were gone. They never stood a chance. People like Sam Hyde lost his TV show, then got banned on everything. It was impossible to compete because we could not take, and I include myself in that also, we could not bring our product to the marketplace. If the product is the content or the show, we were not able even to play in the same ballpark. We weren't even able to play in the league. And so for the same amount of time that these other groups were the number two ad buyer on Facebook, they were number one podcast for conservatives on YouTube. They had a deal with TikTok in the 2024 election to get their content amplified and promoted. Whereas they were being promoted and steadily accumulating and growing and building, making a living, building a subscriber base, building an audience. All the rest of us were out there dying, losing momentum, losing subscribers, losing money because we were banned. And it's not a coincidence that this is the first year that everything opened up. And then all of a sudden, guess what becomes popular? Lo and behold, after 10 years of censorship, blacklisting, cancel culture, all of that, finally, it starts to recede a little bit. Finally, they start to open it up. And all of a sudden, the number one shows, it's like Tucker, Candace, Nick Fuentes. Surprise, surprise. When you stop censoring the conversation, people have an appetite for white identity, criticism of Jews in Israel, criticism of feminism. Guys like Andrew Tate become the most famous people in the world. So that's number one. Where did the generational come from? Well, they stopped suppressing me for a short amount of time. For roughly half of this year, I had no obstacles on that front, and I became massive. Number two, and this is the other thing that nobody ever talks about. Where did the generational run come from? Number two. Again, a lot of people say, well, he's expressing a popular discontent, but here's where he gets it wrong. Well, he's expressing this popular anger, this, that, or the other. The generational run really got off the ground roughly around May and June. And why is it around May or June that this show started to gain a lot of traction? It was because of a very specific news story. It wasn't a particular collaboration. It wasn't a particular interview. Up until the middle of this year, I didn't get a major interview. I had some good interviews. I'm not knocking them, but I didn't get really a massive mainstream interview until later into the summer. But I had my biggest show to date at that point in June, having not had any major mainstream collaborations. Nobody put me on. Nobody had me on a massive show. The biggest show that I had to date in the middle of the year was during the Israel-Iran war. My biggest show to date this year was when Israel bombed Iran and started the war. And then my biggest show to date after that, which was even bigger, was the night that the United States bombed Iran. Why do you think that is? It's because in 2024, I was well known as being one of the only people that didn't vote for Trump. And I didn't vote for Trump because I predicted he would bring us to war with Iran. And I had been predicting for years that it would play out in exactly that way. Ever since October 7th, I had predicted that Trump would be elected because he is the pro-Israel candidate. And he would be elected in part because he would take us to war with Iran in fulfillment of Israel's multi-year, multi-front regional ambitions to create a greater Israel and neutralize all their enemies. And so when Israel bombed Iran and the United States followed up with airstrikes of its own, people ran to watch the show to see what I had to say about it because I was the only one that predicted it. So I didn't launch the generational run because I was being a shock jock, because I was trolling, because I played this shell game where I pretend to be mainstream and I go on Bradley Martin and I act one way and then I go on my show and act like a jerk. The generational run started because I was right, because I was speaking the truth about Jews in Israel, but also their relationship with Trump. And I was the only one who did it. I was the only one that stuck it out and said that, even in 2024, which is pretty late in the game for someone like me. Pretty late in the game, actually, for everybody. Just when everybody thought they had it all figured out about Israel, about Trump and the Republicans versus the Democrats, just when everybody thought they had it all figured out, I threw a big curveball and said, there's something that people are missing, which is that Trump is being allowed to walk through into the halls of power because they know that he will scuttle any diplomacy with Iran. That'll be their opportunity to carry out these strikes. And that's exactly what happened. And it was thanks to my analysis, which was precise and specific and accurate, which is where the whole thing started. And then once people watched the show, they said, wow, okay, so this guy isn't just some hateful maniac. He actually knows what he's talking about. We're actually learning information. We're actually getting good analysis. And it's not just a crackpot conspiracy theory. It's based in reality. That's number two. Number three, and this is maybe more to the point, this is the biggest thing. Where did the generational run come from this year? And this is speaking a little bit more to those issues that people talk about. They say, well, it's the housing prices. They say it's the left bullying everybody. It's this, that, or the other. I think to put it very simply, in the most basic and simple possible terms, people have an appetite for this show because they see that the country is dying. In the simplest version of the idea, and I've been saying it all throughout the year in one way and another, the simplest form of the idea is that people recognize the country is dying. And what exactly does that mean? I think we understand it very deeply when we celebrate Christmas. Because Christmas is something that used to be sacrosanct. And in many ways, we identify Christmas as a quintessential American holiday. Maybe we shouldn't. And maybe that's misguided. And maybe there's even something sacrilegious about that. That's actually a source of criticism and cynicism. Santa Claus is a creation of Coca-Cola, and people say the holiday is too consumerist. It's too commercial. And people say maybe we've gotten away from the true meaning of Christmas or the true spirit of it or something like that. But I believe that the sentiment that surrounds Christmas and the traditions that surround it, whatever you may think about them, the shopping and Santa Claus and the tree and the music and all those things, if there's anything that reminds us what it is to be who we are, it is Christmas. That is the most treasured and maybe the most shared memory that we all have in common from our childhood. That's maybe the one decent thing, even in the 21st century, that we all still have. Maybe that's the one day in every person's childhood, from coast to coast, wherever you are, whoever you are, where you remember what it feels like to be home. When you're surrounded by family, when you're at the tree, Santa brought the presents, having Christmas or Christmas Eve dinner. And we see the way our country is going and we realize there won't even be a Christmas in the new America. Forget about the rest of it, which is a little bit all over the place. Maybe not everybody plays baseball anymore, and obviously politics has polarized everybody, and a lot of things about our country have changed. But we're looking down the barrel of a future where in 50 or 100 years, maybe one day the country wakes up and it's just December 25th, and it doesn't mean anything. And maybe people are out working and the shops are open and people are at school. And how many people are even celebrating? Are there public celebrations? You see, for example, in Europe, they had to shut down the Christmas markets. They had to shut down many of the Christmas celebrations because they are being invaded by Muslims and Africans that not only don't celebrate Christmas, but are hostile. There was a church in Scotland where a statue of the baby Jesus was decapitated. And they defaced the church with a message that said, "You're finished here. You're finished here." And they decapitated a statue of the baby Jesus. And it's hard not to feel like that isn't true. Or rather, it's hard to feel like that isn't true when they say, "You're finished here." It does sort of feel like we're finished here, doesn't it? It feels like we're finished in Germany. It feels like we're finished in France. It feels like we're finished in England, in Italy. It feels like we're finished in America. We see where the arrow is pointing. We see that Zoran Mamdani is the socialist mayor of New York. Vivek Ramaswamy is going to be the governor of Ohio. Usha Vance is going to be the first lady. In Texas, it's a tug of war between Indians taking over the rich new construction subdivisions in Frisco and the Muslims building their new subdivision in Dallas, where they're going to have a super mosque in the center of it. And Seattle is filled with Indians and San Francisco is filled with Chinese. And Los Angeles is filled with Mexicans and Venezuelans. And it feels like we're finished. We're done. The country of the last 100 years is going to apparently die before the conclusion of this century, before the conclusion of this 100 years. And I'll tell you the nature of this. It has to do with our identity. It has to do with our religion, and it has to do with our race. What it is to be American is to be European and to be Christian. That is what it is, actually, to be an American. And the day that America ceases to be mostly or meaningfully European and Christian, it's no longer going to feel like America. When the country is divided up between minorities, blacks, African immigrants, Asians, Indians, Chinese, Hispanics, Muslims, is it going to meaningfully feel like America, or even any country at all for that matter? Will it feel like a country at all when you're riding on the public transit, when you're at the office, when you're at school, when you're watching these movies? With all the diversity, will it even feel like we have a country at all? Forget about whether it is America. Will it even be a coherent whole? It feels like the answer is no. And it feels like we're finished. We're done. And if the country is its people, and it is, the United States of America doesn't exist outside of the Americans, outside of the actual flesh and blood people like George Washington or Henry Ford or Charles Lindbergh or Thomas Jefferson or Abraham Lincoln or Frank Sinatra. The country is the flesh and blood people. If those people and their way of life specifically, their mannerisms, their customs, their holidays, their beliefs, their culture, their value, even the way they look, the way they act. If those people are going away, if they're going extinct, then the country is going extinct too. And of course, people will still live here. The landmass isn't going anywhere. The government isn't going anywhere. There'll still be human habitation here, but it won't actually be the same place. And you see that everywhere you go, everywhere you look, in every way. You see it when you're driving in traffic. You see it when you go to work, when you send your kids to school. It just isn't the same country anymore. And there's something incredibly dispiriting and sad and depressing about that. And people say, why am I popular? It's because it feels like I'm one of the only people that's fighting back against this. I'm one of the only people that has freed myself from the mental shackles, because that's all it is. We are accused of being racist, white supremacists, neo-Nazis, anti-Semites, Christian nationalists, white nationalists, whatever. People like the show because they like when an unapologetic white American stands up for the country and says, no, we're not going to die. At the minimum, I'm not going to die. I'm not going out without a fight. And if one man can get up and say, I'm not going to go down without a fight, then maybe a whole country can get up and say that we're not going down without a fight. Maybe that's the strength of the message. And that is really the future conflict. This is what I predict for 2026. They're going to try to gaslight us into thinking that all of our concerns are bound up in the economics. That, oh, it's just the young people, and the young people are mad because housing and home ownership is out of reach. We need to make it more affordable. Honestly, is that really the problem? Riddle me this. Let's say this Trump government goes in and they build a bunch of low-cost housing for all these Indians and Muslims and Hispanics and Chinese and everybody else. You go and you live in Texas and you're in a subdivision that's 90% Indian. You go to a university, it's 80% Chinese. You go to your job site, if you could even get employed, it's 50% white, 50% non-white. Are you going to feel much better that your housing got a little bit less expensive? Are you going to feel better that they bought some cheap piece of shit? They built some new construction for you? And if you're lucky, your wife and kids, so that you can go and watch Disney Plus and watch the new Avengers and half of them are women and the other half are not white? Are you going to feel a whole lot better about your life? I don't think so. The next step is they are going to try to gaslight us into thinking that this has everything to do with things other than what I'm describing. This is about economics. This is about the political left. This is about everything other than what it's really about. For example, I saw Tucker Carlson interview Matt Walsh, and they're talking about the great replacement, that non-white people are replacing white people everywhere where we used to reside. And Tucker said, I'm not even saying it's a bad thing, but they're telling us that this is happening and they're denying that it's real. He says, I'm not even saying it's a bad thing. He repeatedly and consistently says, identity politics is evil. And the great replacement has nothing to do with racial demographics. It has to do with voting rights. Well, here's a statistic for you. Since 2012, 50% of this country's newborns have been white and 50% have been non-white. So in the census, it will tell you that the country is 57% white, 43% non-white. But if you look at the newborns, if you look at where the arrow is pointing, for the last 13 years, the newborns have been 50-50. For the younger generations, it is 50-50. For Gen Z, for Gen Alpha, this is our country. And when we are the old people, when the boomers and then the Gen Xers die off, and it's millennials, Zoomers, Gen Alpha, Gen Beta, it's going to be even less white than that. The older generations will be 50-50. The younger generations will be even less. And every successive generation, less white after that. And that is what every city, every town, whether it's a small town or a medium-sized city or the biggest cities, that's what every single polity in the country will look like. And there's not going to be a Christmas in America when that happens. There's not going to be a 4th of July. There's not going to be those traditions and customs, manner of life that we used to have. It won't be like it was in A Christmas Story. It won't be like it was in Elf. It won't be the kind of city it was like in Home Alone. It's going to be a completely different place. And will that be America? And will that matter? I think it matters a great deal to everybody. I think it matters a great deal to anybody that cares about America. And what they're going to try to do for the purpose of domestic stability is to gaslight all of us into thinking that that's not really happening, or that if it is, that that's not really a problem. And that the only reason that anybody would have an issue with multiracialism, the only reason that anybody would have a problem with these changing demographics, is if because there's something wrong with you. If you have some sort of psychological or emotional disorder, if you were raised wrong, if you have hatred in your heart, if you're some sort of twisted malcontent, like me, they say. Why is this person so angry? Why are these people so spiteful? Well, what went wrong along the way? It's because they couldn't get laid. It's because they were angry. It's because of their childhood. It's because they deserve coal in their stockings because they're a terrible person. And I think it's all the more reason in 2026 we have to double down. And we have to say this isn't spite. This isn't, strictly speaking, an emotion like anger. We are not malcontents. We are not freaks. We're not people that are not well-adjusted. I think everybody from every age group, from every demographic cohort, men and women, married men, single men, married women, single women, young and old, I think everybody is realizing we want to fight for our civilization. We want to have a civilization. Christendom and Europe and the civilization of our ancestors is actually worth fighting for. And not only is there nothing wrong with that, that's actually the only normal position. That is the normal, healthy, righteous disposition. You should want to fight for the civilization of your ancestors. That is the inheritance of our posterity. It is normal for us to want to fight to preserve those things. It is not abnormal. Maybe it takes an abnormal person to be the moral entrepreneur. Maybe it takes an abnormal person to be the first to recognize it. Maybe it takes an abnormal, antisocial person possessed by a vision and an idea to be the first person to strike out and say what everybody is thinking, but which no one is willing to say out loud. You got me there. Maybe that's the case. But certainly, it is the most normal thing in the world to want to protect and defend our home. And that's ultimately what it is about. It's not about hating the Indians that are coming here. It's not about hating Islam or Muslims. It's not about hating Jews. It's not about hating anybody. It is about loving our home, loving where we came from, loving your hometown, your childhood, your mother and father, your grandparents. It is about revering them, having enough respect and love for your parents, for your mother and father, not to destroy the civilization of them and their ancestors. And that is the most normal thing in the world. As a matter of fact, it's so normal that every other race understands that. Every other group is fighting like hell for their people. Indians marry other Indians. They have Indian children with Indian names. They visit India. That is exactly what Usha Vance and Vivek Ramaswamy do. That is what Chinese people do. That is what Jews do. Jews marry other Jews. They have Jewish children and they spend time in Israel because they love their own people. They love their ancestors. They love their home, their traditions, their religion. That's normal. That is what every people in the world is entitled to. I'm just the freak or the crazy person that will stick out and say, white people deserve that too. White people and Christians deserve the same thing that every other race is entitled to. And that is a civilization, that is a home, that is a nation. That is a neighborhood that they can call their own. That is a neighborhood that stands the test of time, that they could go back in their old age and visit, and it hasn't been radically transformed by mass migration. So people like to say, well, the generational run came because all these people that are angry about their economic prospects are pissed off and bored, and they're looking for somebody to blame. No, the generational run happened because I'm right. Because I am right. I am right about these things. The things that are killing our country are mass migration, feminism, and our Jewish oligarchy. Our country is not dying. Our country is being murdered. Our country is being murdered by these three things. Without them, we would thrive. If we did not have massive amounts of migration being dumped into our country, it wouldn't actually matter that the fertility rate is going down, because in a generation, the country might be smaller, it would still look the same. If we didn't have feminism constantly attacking male sexuality, constantly attacking masculinity, deferring childbirth and child rearing until the third decade of a person's life, maybe white people be having children. And if it wasn't for our Jewish oligarchy, which spends all our resources fighting Israel's wars in the Middle East, Jewish oligarchy that actually hates white people, that says white people have anti-Semitism in their DNA, well, what is that supposed to mean? They want us all dead. They want our genetics to die. It's no coincidence that they're in charge in every one of these Western countries, every Western country that's committing suicide. These are the three things killing the country. These are the three things which are why we're not going to have an America at the end of the century. And those are the three things I'm right about. That's why they throw every one of those labels at me. Racist, sexist, anti-Semite. No, we're just tired of mass migration, feminism, and Jewish power. I'm not a racist. I just don't want to die by mass migration. I'm not a sexist. I just don't want my race to die because of feminism, which is decadence. I'm not an anti-Semite. I don't hate anybody. I just want Christians and Europeans to be in charge of the country, not Jews that clearly hate us and want us all to die because they believe we have anti-Semitism in our bones and Rome destroyed the Second Temple. And I'm right about all those things. So anyway, That is my year, excuse me, my year in review about the generational run. And the reason I lay that out explicitly and specifically at the end is because we have been gearing up for this fight for 10 years. I always said that America First is inevitable because I knew that eventually the truth would get out. Eventually, white people were going to get tired of the Jewish oligarchy. They're going to get tired of the black crime. They're going to get tired of the mass migration. I always knew that America First would inevitably become mainstream, would inevitably become dominant. Here's the question now. As always, they are going to fight back in a way that is subversive and convoluted and which is not actually obvious. How are they going to fight back? Well, they're not going to directly fight me because they know how that would go. If Ben Shapiro sat with me in a debate, even to have the debate would be to finish the debate. To have a Jewish person that only cares about Israel sit down and have to defend, like, why we're going to war in the Middle East over nuclear weapons, to even have that debate would be to finish it once and for all. They don't want to create that dialectic. The day that you pose the question, should it be America first or Israel first, that's the day that every single person affirms America first. They're not going to have me sit down and debate Vivek Ramaswamy. The day that you put it up for debate, are we going to have a nation of flesh and blood people or a nation of ideas? That's the day that everybody affirms we want a nation of men, a nation of people, flesh and blood people that fought wars to defend the ideas that you claim is the sum of what we are. They are not going to create that dialectic. They're going to do something much more subtle and much more subversive and much more calculated and complex, which is they are going to try to skin suit this movement. It's like an alien invasion. One way the aliens could win is they could come down in spaceships with tentacles and all the rest, and they could declare war on humanity. But what happens when the aliens land in a flying saucer with the tentacles and 100 eyes? What happens when they declare war on humanity? They bind all of humanity together against the aliens. So the sophisticated aliens will do something more sophisticated. They do the invasion of the body snatchers. They look like people. They act like people. They're not people. And whether it's invasion of the body snatchers or They Live, whatever, you know, pick your poison, they look just close enough to people that they could slowly but surely capture the decision-making institutions, taste-making institutions, and then they influence the masses to become complacent in their slavery. This is always the track that the political class will take. They did it with the Tea Party movement. They did it with MAGA. Eventually, they stopped fighting Trump and they acquiesced, or they appeared to acquiesce, and they filled up Trump's White House. They filled up Mar-a-Lago. They filled up the cabinet. And they put on the MAGA hat and they started swearing like Trump and they started talking like Trump. And then they slowly but surely brought us back to establishment conservatism. Hence why this year, what did we get? Corporate tax cuts, bombing Iran, no mass deportations. We're actually protecting the illegals who work on farms. They're going to protect Jeffrey Epstein and all his clients. It's because they did a subversive strategy. And they're doing the same thing with America First. And if you pay close attention, this was the whole Tucker Carlson MO. He brought me on the show, wrapped his arms around me and said, hey, look, I'm going to listen to this kid who's got all these problems. And ever since we did the interview, he goes on every other show and says, I tried to talk him in off the ledge and get him to stop being an anti-Semite. He hates women because he's afraid of women. I tried to get him to stop hating Jews, but I failed. I know the white replacement is happening, but I'm not saying it's a bad thing. White identity is the only thing that can ruin America. He went around telling people that the whole purpose of the interview was to get me to talk, so I made myself look bad. He could give me a platform, earn the credibility from my audience, and then pitch something that looks the same, but is ever so subtly different, which goes something like this. Jews are not the problem. It is neocons, and especially evangelical Christians. Non-white immigration isn't the problem. It is just mass migration in general, and we should have a colorblind meritocracy. The women aren't the problem. It's all of these culture and gender wars. It's all this other stuff that's happening. A subtle little difference. And this is what they're going to play on repeat in 2026. They're going to try to destroy my credibility and say, oh, well, I'm a freak. I'm a hater. I'm actually a horrible human being. I'm actually an anti-Semite. It's these other people that are pushing something constructive. Fuentes wants to burn it all down. These guys want to build everything up. Fuentes is a real racist. These guys have their criticisms about black crime, but they want a colorblind meritocracy. This is going to be the conceit going forward. This is how they will defang and neutralize the Groypers. They're going to offer a moderate option. It is going to look and sound like me, but on the fundamentals, it's going to be completely different. They will not affirm the reality and centrality of race. They will not talk about our Jewish mafia that is running the fucking planet. They're not going to talk about feminism in and of itself being the problem. They'll say it's affluent white female liberals, but they'll never say it's feminism in itself, which is actually the root of all evil. And they will pitch something, like I said, they might say, like Tucker did, retard and faggot, and they might make some gesture towards 13 to 50 and some of this humor. They'll do some insinuation about conspiracy theories or Jews, but they will always bring it back home to, what about those good Jews? But race isn't actually meaningful. The speech about blood guilt, etc., etc. That is going to be the playbook. And so I don't know if they'll kill me in 2026. I don't know what they're cooking up for me, what they have in store for me. But in 2026, that is the year where they're going to try to strike at the head, the sheep scatter, and they're going to try to corral them back into Slavery Incorporated with some kind of Groyper veneer. That's going to be the playbook. You can take that to the bank. They're already playing it. They've already been playing it. And that was the 1-2 punch of Tucker and Piers Morgan. Bring me onto the show, making of a murderer. Let's get a glimpse into the twisted mind of Nick Fuentes and show everybody how evil he is and how anyone could follow him. Then bring him on Piers Morgan to reveal the real Nick Fuentes that loves Hitler and this, that, and the other. That's the MO. I would add one final thing and then we'll move on. Here's the biggest play. In the end, where all of this is headed is J.D. Vance for president in 2028. That is the lead which they have buried. As quickly as they got J.D. Vance in the vice presidency nomination last year, they want to get him in the Oval Office in 2028. They want to make him the president. Why? Who knows? But there are powerful, powerful forces in Silicon Valley, billionaires, the GOP, all the king's men that want to make J.D. Vance the president. And I have identified myself very early on as an opponent of J.D. Vance. And for that, they want to bury me. For that, they want to kill me. Because I'm telling a lot of young men that Vance is going to need in the election, I'm telling a lot of young men, do not trust this guy because this guy is a creep. We don't know who he is. We don't know what his real name is. We don't know what his real job is. We don't know who he owes, who blackmailed him, who he works for. We just don't know anything about this guy. And it's weird. It's weird. He's weird. His family's weird. It's weird that they're all promoting him. Something is not right here. And that much is obvious. Everybody with eyes can see that something is off about that. And that's the biggest thing. and I believe it when I say this, that if I were going out on the show every night and saying, let's all be good team players and let's all vote for J.D. Vance in 28, they would tolerate me. Trust me when I tell you that if I were going out every day on the show and saying, let's all be good little Republicans and let's dutifully vote for J.D. Vance, you know they would tolerate me. They would tolerate my antics. They would tolerate my extremism. They would tolerate all of it. They would bring me in under their wing as a junior partner. They would pat me on the head. They would give me opportunities if I was willing to play ball, if I was willing to horse trade, if I was willing to say, vote for JD, everybody, we got to be all in. But they are clearing the runway. They have created a media ecosystem using comedians, using podcasts, using conventions, using things like Turning Point. They have created a runway. And they have cleared the runway for Vance to be unopposed in 28, to raise $1 billion, and then to be the next president, to inherit all the machinery that Trump created, all this stuff that Trump has done with the executive branch, all the rules Trump has broken. They want J.D. Vance to inherit that. You want to know why? It's the same reason Elon Musk was brought into this administration. Elon Musk brought in Doge in the beginning of the year. They cut no waste, fraud, or abuse. They didn't cut any spending. But you know what they did do? Elon Musk made all the hiring decisions in the Pentagon. Elon Musk and the Silicon Valley people, they made all the decisions about hiring and firing in the Department of War. Why does that matter? Because the Department of War is going to determine who gets the military contracts when the military embraces AI, when the military embraces unmanned aircraft, boats, vehicles. Who is going to build the fleet of unmanned ships? Who is going to build the fleet of unmanned aircraft, of drones? Who is going to handle AI for the military? It will be those people that were brought in because of Elon's money, because of David Sachs' fundraiser, brokered by Vance. They will be making those decisions. Like, for example, they're going to bring in Anduril, Palmer Luckey's company, funded by Thiel. Vance actually brokered the deal for venture capital to invest in Anduril. Vance's position at Mithril, Peter Thiel's venture capital firm, allowed Vance to funnel money into Palmer Luckey's Anduril. Where is Anduril building their drone factory? In Ohio. In Ohio, where J.D. Vance is from, where Les Wexner did a fundraiser for Vance to make him the senator. And now that Vance left his Senate seat, they arranged for the lieutenant governor of Ohio to fill that Senate seat so he would be taken out of the running for Ohio governor and Trump would endorse Vivek Ramaswamy. So that when Ramaswamy becomes governor of Ohio, they will be favorable to Palmer Luckey's Anduril plant and his people in the Pentagon will buy his drones and whatever. That's a taste. That's a taste of what you can expect when Vance becomes president. It's a taste. And when Elon dragged his people through all the different government departments and agencies to cut waste, fraud, and abuse, they didn't do a lot of cutting, but you know what they did bring in? They brought in Palantir. How are we going to cut the waste, fraud, and abuse? We have to take all the data from the Social Security Administration, from the Treasury Department, from the Education Department. We have to plug it into our AI software so that we can evaluate where the waste, fraud, and abuse is. Well, they didn't cut $2 trillion or even $1 trillion in spending as promised, but you know what they did do? They got four more departments and agencies onto Palantir software. And they are the Social Security Administration. They are Health and Human Services. They are the Treasury Department and the Department of Education. What a coincidence. because Elon Musk was at PayPal, like Peter Thiel. It's all the same people. Andreessen Horowitz, Oracle, PayPal, Palantir, these are all the same people working for all the same investors, working for all the same founders. And they were all at the same fundraiser, and they all gave their money to this administration. And there it is. That's the other thing they're going to push in 26. They want to neutralize all the enemies of Vance so that in 2027, no one is even going to think of challenging Vance in the primary. They want to clear the way so that DeSantis, so that Rubio, so that nobody will even think of raising a challenge. Vance will secure the nomination, and then as quickly as he became the nominee, he'll become the president. And that's how you go from a never-Trumper in 2020 to a Trump-endorsed, Thiel-funded senator in 22 to a Thiel, Tucker, Elon-lobbied vice presidential candidate in 24. And in 25, they're ready to give him the crown. They want him to be the president. We don't even know who the fuck he is. This administration is already crashing and burning, and he's the number two in command. And they're ready for him to be the next guy. So this is a message, this is a plea, this is a beacon to all real Americans. If you want to take your country back, you have to stand up and take your own side. It's all coming down to this. This country is not here for AI. This country is not here for a bunch of immigrant founders. This country does not belong to Indians and Jews. This country belongs to the descendants of the people that founded it. It belongs to European civilization and Christendom. And if you want to foist this fat jelly donut on us as president with this Indian wife and kids, then you better give us what we deserve, an immigration moratorium. We need to restrain Israel. We want our country back. Don't just give it up without a fight. Oh, I guess we're all just voting for Vance. I guess we're all just doing this now. No, fuck that. Whether a Republican wins in 28 or not, this country is finished. You do realize that, right? They'll tell you, well, it's better than the Democrat. Well, it's better than nothing. Well, it's better than the alternative. Whether a Republican wins or a Democrat wins doesn't make a fucking difference, as evidenced by this administration. This country is going down the tubes with or without Trump winning in 24. It'll go down the tubes with or without Vance winning in 2028. Understand that. We're finished. Whatever happens there, we need drastic action. So it's time for white people to start demanding more from our elected representatives. It's all these other people that would convince you to settle for less. Negotiate with yourself. And settle for less. Settle for whatever they will serve up on a platter. Settle for whatever slop and shit they're going to feed you. And we're going to have to start to say, no, we deserve more than what we're getting. We deserve more than what we're getting from Trump. We deserve more than what we're getting from our elites. If you want us to get on board, you better earn it. You better make it worth our while. And that is something they do not want to have to do. That's the real battle. They're not after me. They're after all of you because they want your vote. They're not after me. They don't give a shit about me one way or the other. They want me to get everybody to calm down. They want me to corral everybody and lead them to Vance. They want me to get everybody to chill out, stop being angry, stop being mad that our country's being destroyed. Just chill out and relax. And let's just vote Republican every year forever. Just keep voting Republican. Don't look up. Don't look right or left at how you're being outnumbered. Just shut the fuck up and vote Republican. We promise we'll make a Big Mac cheaper. And I won't do it. And for that, they're going to try to get me killed. So that's what's on my radar in 2026. And I'll tell you what else. 2026, we'd be lucky if we stay out of war with Iran. Look at the year in review for this Trump administration. Take this to the bank. 2025, what did they tell you? They told you this year was going to be a golden age. Think about where we were this time last year. Does anybody remember? Does anybody remember where you were on election night in 2024? I remember where I was. I was here streaming this show, feeling like an idiot because I didn't vote for Trump, and everybody was so exuberant, so over the moon. Everybody was celebrating. Do you remember where you were? Do you remember the excitement, the energy, the hopes, the expectations? And then what happened? A month later, we got Vivek Ramaswamy and Sri Ramakrishnan and Elon Musk telling us that if we didn't want infinite H-1B visas, that we should fuck ourselves in the face. We got Marco Rubio as our Secretary of State, John Ratcliffe as the Director of the CIA. Total disappointment as far as the cabinet is concerned. They promised us it would be different this time. It would be a golden age. They said there would be mass deportations. You're going back, they said. And how are we doing here in 2025? Well, let's see. According to the latest ICE data, we have deported 330,000 people this year. 330,000. So Joe Biden brought in 10 million in 4 years. That's an average of 2.5 million per year. We deported 300,000 this year. You multiply that by four, we get 1.2 million by the end of the first term. That's not massive. How are we doing in terms of the wars? Well, let's see. Trump has bombed Somalia more than any president in history. We bombed Nigeria on Christmas. We've bombed Venezuela 25 times. We bombed Iran. We bombed Syria last week. We bombed Yemen. We went to war with Yemen for a month. How many countries has the Trump administration bombed? I think it's a dozen. We're still at war in Ukraine. Looks like we're going to go back into Iran pending the fifth meeting between Trump and Netanyahu on the 29th to bomb their ballistic missile program. How about trade and tariffs? Is that making the economy stronger? In October, they didn't even release the jobs numbers because it was so bad. No infrastructure bill, no investment, no jobs in the country. We did get a corporate tax cut, an extension of the corporate tax cut from 2017. How about transparency on the JFK assassination, Epstein files, 9/11? We got none of it. Congress had to force the Trump administration to release the Epstein files, and the files we got are heavily redacted. They're withholding most of them, and the ones that we got, it's like a joke. They're blacked out completely. People had to actually copy and paste the text, had to use an exploit in the documents to even get anything out of them. 1 year in, it is a complete disaster, maybe a disaster exceeding anybody's expectations. And what did they say about me during the election last year? They said I was a Democrat shill. They said I was a Democrat plant for saying that maybe we should have some expectations. In 2024, I said, I will not vote for Trump unless he pledges not to bomb Iran, unless he promises an immigration moratorium. Well, Trump bombed Iran, and in terms of immigration, we filled the H-1B cap, we doubled the number of Chinese students, and we don't have mass deportations. So maybe it would have been a good thing if we forced Trump's feet to the fire on those issues. Maybe it would have been a good thing if we demanded a commitment back then when he needed our vote, not now when he needs nothing from us. For that, I was called a shill, plant, a fed. They said I made a deal with the FBI. To avoid prosecution, I said that I would not get Trump elected. Now you see that I was right. And the reason I bring this up is because just as quickly as Trump has crashed and burned, they want us to forget about it and already get ready for the next one. As quickly as Trump has crashed and burned, it took all of 1 year for every promise to be broken, every promise to be totally destroyed. They want us to get ready to hold our nose and vote for the next one. You don't like this administration? Well, get ready to vote for the second in command in this administration, because that will surely be better. Why would it be better? Why is it better for us to commit right now? Why is it better? Why would we even, in the first place, why would it be smart for us to commit to vote at all in 2028? Why don't you worry about this year? Why don't you worry about governing? You want us to vote in 28? It's 25 and nothing is going right. Why don't you worry about this administration? Worry about 2026 and 2027. Worry about keeping your promises, doing a good job before we even think about voting in 28 at all. But to boot, they want us to get ready to vote for the second in command? There's not even a primary. We don't even know who this guy is. What does he do other than give speeches? Well, he gave a great speech at Turning Point. He's saying all the right things. Okay, well, so did Trump. So did Obama. So did a lot of people. That's politics. He said all the right things. Everybody says the right things. That's politics. Okay, he's good at saying the right things. It's not that hard, actually. Why don't we wait and see? And that's my pitch. I'm not pledging to vote for anybody, Republican or Democrat, J.D. Vance or anybody else, until we actually get to 2028. I want to see who the candidates are. I want to see their pitch. And I want to see how this vice president governs. You want my vote? Hey, you have power. Turn the ship around. You want my vote? Why don't you walk across the fucking hallway and talk to your boss about that? They say, vote for JD. Everybody needs to get on board for JD. I don't know. 47 is not doing such a great job. Maybe 48 should walk down the hall, knock on the door of the Oval Office and say, hey, you're killing my chance of getting elected. How's that for an incentive? You want to talk about Vance for 48? Everyone's getting behind him. We're all ready for that. I'm not ready for that. I'm not ready for that until I get my mass deportations, until the war in Ukraine is over, until somebody can restrain Israel and prevent them from getting us into another war. I'm not getting ready to vote for anybody until we can shut down all immigration from all these countries. You want to bring in Indians and Chinese? Then start deporting more than you bring in. Get us to net zero. Then we can talk about skilled migration or any migration for that matter. They're already telling us, get ready, get in line to vote again. Get your registration. Fuck you. Everybody knows this country is finished. Everybody knows the country's going down the tubes. The Republicans will not lift a finger to do a thing about it. The graft, the corruption, the stealing, if you knew the extent of it, you would want a revolution tomorrow. You would want to kill these people. And I'm not saying to do that, not encouraging violence, but I'm saying you would want to. If you could see the graft and the corruption, the stealing that is going on in this administration from these people that were picked by Trump, it is just the most brazen cronyism and larceny, embezzlement you've ever even heard of. It's like unheard of. And they're already telling you, well, get ready to vote for Vance. It is a level of hubris I've never seen before. And I'm one of the only people that's not at the party. I'm one of the only people that's not being paid under the table in 24 and 25. All these other people are ready to say, well, I like Vance. Well, I'm getting ready to vote Republican. Well, Trump's still doing an okay job. No, I don't think so. I don't think you understand. There's a lot more urgency, and we want more than what we're getting. So I'm leaving myself open to all options. And I'm willing to punish the GOP. I do believe the GOP needs to be burned to the fucking ground. Because I'll tell you what, if Donald Trump cannot get it together in the next 3 years, that is exactly what the GOP deserves. The voters did their part. The voters delivered the White House, the popular vote, the Electoral College, the House, the Senate. The voters delivered a mandate. if you can't capitalize on this the third time, you won in 2016, you blew it in 20, you got back in 24. If you blew yet another opportunity when you had everything going for you, you promised so much, delivered so little. If you blow it again, you don't deserve to get in power for another 4 years. You deserve to be fired. The GOP deserves to be burned to the fucking ground. And they want to say, well, we'll never come back from that. Well, it'll take us all this time to rebuild. But this. Then you better get your ass in overdrive. Don't tell me. I'm a podcaster. Don't come and give me a hard time. I'm not running for office. I'm a live streamer. I'm a podcaster. I'm a weird kid in my basement, for crying out loud. Don't come and cry to me. Well, we're trying to win in 28 and you're not being a good member of the team. I'm not a member of the team. I don't have a jersey and I don't have a contract and I'm not getting fucking paid. Don't come and tell me about we're going to have a hard time in 28. You have an opportunity. You have the House. You have the Senate. You have the White House. You ran the table and the voters delivered. And now you're fucking stealing. You're not delivering. You're flapping your gums. You're stealing. You're lazy. Nobody gives a shit. And you want us to go out and vote again in 28? We should go out and destroy you in 28. We should go out and absolutely burn you to the ground in 28. You'd be lucky to leave with your lives and only have the party destroyed for this treason. They go in July and say, you want the Epstein tapes? I don't need your vote. You want the Epstein tapes? You're a sucker. You want me then to go and campaign for this shit? J.D. Vance goes on Theo Von and says, I don't know what Palantir is. I don't know what that is. Tucker goes on Theo Von. I don't know what Palantir is. Oh, like hell you don't know what Palantir is, you fucking liar. It's disgusting. So my message is this. There is a loaded gun pointed at the GOP. Fix it now. Fix the country or get blown away in 28. That's it. No negotiations. No one's holding their nose one more time. No one's going to be a good sport. We're not going to hold the line. We're not going to vote for the lesser of two evil. There is a loaded gun pointed at the GOP, figuratively, not literally. Figuratively. It's a very toxic climate right now, violent climate. But figuratively, there's a loaded gun pointed at the GOP. You better fix this country. J.D. Vance, you better march down to the Oval Office and get this guy awake from his nap and fix the country, or none of us are turning out in 28. That's an ultimatum. Don't say we want it to burn it to the ground. We want it to succeed. You have left us no choice. And then we'll have a new generation in 2032. You don't want to see what that looks like. You think this is bad? You don't want to see what comes next if Trump fails. So don't give me this. Well, they only want to destroy and we want to build. You want to build? Well, then get started. Get started on the mass deportations. Don't tell me about 600,000 Chinese students and you're going to fill the H-1B visa cap every year. And we need the students for the universities and we need the talent and we need the labor and all that nonsense. You keep talking like that, you could blow it out your ass in 28. I'm sick of it. And that's where all this is headed. And recognize we're the only ones that are really in the game. One of the reasons they're talking about me is because we're the only ones that are in the game. All these other people, they're not playing a game. All these other people, they're content to do their show, do the GOP talking points. Hey, everybody, vote Republican. Democrats suck and Muslims are bad. Vote Republican. This is the only show where we're actually raising a challenge and saying we're going to take the momentum and the support and the juice that we have and we're going to use it to affect political change. We're going to use it to create a tribe. We are a team. And we're going to use it to throw our weight around. You want our vote? You better get it done. You're in power now. You want a campaign in 28? Use your power. Make us happy. You'll earn it. You'll take the wind right out of my sails. Otherwise, you could forget it. We will burn it to the ground. I'm the necessary evil. You want me to be the villain? I'll be the villain. I'll be the necessary evil. They say, he's going to get the whole thing destroyed. He's going to get the Democrats to win. I'm necessary evil then. Call it what you want. You want me to be the villain? I'll play the villain. In 28, I'll be the extremist. I'll be the radical. Somebody has to, because otherwise, nobody has the urgency. Nobody cares. So I'll force them to care.